Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back as my guest Dr. David Lowe. Today we're discussing universal spirituality as manifested through our dreams. I don't know about you all, but my dreams have been kind of weird lately, so this will be an interesting interview. Dr. Lowe's been on the show several times before, and we've talked about dream work. We've talked about universal spirituality. He's got a book that is a great overview of spirituality written in language that is easy to understand. And we'll talk a little bit about the book, and then we'll go right into dreams. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Lowe.
Okay, thank you for having me on. It's always great to be here.
Would you like to tell the listening audience a little bit about your book on universal spirituality and how you came to write it?
Sure. I had this peak experience or epiphany after teaching for some years in religious studies as an adjunct professor to write something. And it really came to me, and it's always bothered me that, you know, there is this notion out there, this vague idea of, you know, respectful voices, diversity, listening to all different cultures and so forth. but nobody's really put a label on what that is, it seems. So The notion of universal spirituality, that there is this underlying dimension of ethics that we can all reach and get to, which will let us all get along. What the book does is flesh out the mechanics of that in spiritual terms. Yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
So how did you come about the understanding that this needed to be written?
Well, just looking at all the fighting and arguing in the religions, just a general sense of frustration over how, you know, the human creature simply cannot get along, either because of religious differences or because of differences of other custom and background, of language, linguistic differences. There's so many things which, if we just had a deeper grounding in understanding more profound things about life, about ethics and so forth, we could communicate. We would get past our childish issues and communicate at a more mature level. And this book communicates that. There's lots of word balloons and pictures. It's not as whimsical as the Idiot book series, but it's kind of like that, but not very much. It's entertaining.
But for spirituality.
Yeah, exactly.
Spirituality for dummies.
Kind of.
In your book, you talk that dream symbolism constitutes a universal language, and that's certainly
right. True.
I mean, we don't have dreams that are only seen in one religion or one ethnic group. So can you say a little bit about that?
You know, that's very profound to fathom, but the best way I can go about explaining it is to talk about, and I do this in the book. Take three different people: this illiterate 80-year-old Amazon shaman from the jungle, never seen civilization. A life insurance salesman, age 35, married, family, successful, from New York City, and the 12-year-old son of an Afghan terrorist who's already carrying an AK-47. Right, three totally different people, but they all know what a cloud is, what food is, what sex is, what family is, what water is. They all perceive the same basic world, if you will. Okay, and that stimuli comes into our senses before we do anything with it in our minds. We all associate it with different things according to our cultural conditioning and so forth. But before we do that with that information, it all comes in the same. So we all share the same basic world. That's the material which the dream spiritual faculty works with to formulate universal symbols. That's a good way, I think, of fathoming how dreams do have a universal mechanism for communication. Yeah.
So in that regard, why are dreams so important?
Well, I think dreams exist. I think myself and most dream work practitioners like me believe that dreams are simply that. I mean, they are the part of who we are, which is always telling us, always offering information about how we could potentially become happier and more fulfilled. That's what they do. That's what they're for. They also have important psychobiological functions, but their real important function for us is the spiritual one. I mean, we all dream, you know, no matter how stubborn or ignorant or intransigent that the human being might be, he dreams. He or she does dream. So he has that psychic faculty. Some people have special psychic gifts like clairvoyance or whatever, but we all dream. And so we all have that faculty. And it's just part of who we are. It's always offering information, which we don't have to pay attention to, right? I mean, if we ignore our dreams, our life will turn out more or less okay, probably in the normal course of events. But there's always the possibility of being happier and more fulfilled. And that's
there's also a possibility that you have some very prophetic dreams that save your life.
Yeah, oh goodness, yes. I think that the ones which are literal, which I'm occasionally, there are dreams which I think the further you get along in a mystical spiritual path, the more often that happens, this happens. But we do occasionally get dreams which tell us things literally, either symbolically literally or verbally literally. Those are the ones, I think, which tend to be referred to as prophetic. I've had a bunch of them in my path through life, which have pretty much saved me from perdition in any number of ways.
Well, do you think most everybody can have prophetic dreams?
Everybody can have prophetic dreams under that definition. If they care enough about their spirituality to really pursue a deeper path. If you take an interest in meditation, all these practices you can do, different kinds of mystical practices, looking into spirituality, casting about, going to different groups, trying to be around teachers, even using the right technology, using these masks and these sounds and so forth, you can really become curious about your deeper spirituality, and your dreams will respond. And take an interest in dreams. Read a book about them. That will get things moving, definitely. Yeah.
And it could be that there are some deeper secrets that, like, if your soul or your higher self wants you to know something that might be hidden from you.
Right.
Just case in point, you know, you're married and your husband's having an affair.
Right.
It's often very common for the wife to dream about that and get that information through a dream.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, there really are no secrets if your soul wants you to know something, because the dream world is used to reveal things.
If you really have a desire for your greater happiness and for the greater happiness and contentment of all those around you, then you know, even then your dreams are remarkable problem solving tools. There's so many situations I've been in which has been pointed. Things that have been pointed out to me which I wouldn't have perceived otherwise and which worked later for my benefit. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think earlier cultures, especially the indigenous cultures, but even I think the Greeks and the Romans used a whole bunch of information from their dreams to make important decisions. We've forgotten that, but that
yeah,
is
we've forgotten
in cultures.
That. I mean, if you actually you think about, they thought that dreams were, you know, information from the gods, and
exactly. They
basically are. We understand, those of us who are into deeper spirituality understand the value of a good physical representation or mental representation, visual representation of a deity or a figure or of some sort of higher, more profound entity, which does communicate to you through dreams. So it's not changed. We may have a more sophisticated architecture around our dream incubation ceremonies and so forth, but it's the same thing, you know.
Do you remember the dream that Lincoln had before his assassination? It was
he had it 2 weeks before he was assassinated. That was a classic situation which he could have looked at. In maybe a different way than he
and
did.
And maybe avoided something, right?
Yeah, right. He was forewarned, and he didn't do what he could have done, perhaps, to avoid that event from happening, or to make it more difficult for the assassination to happen. It's happened sometime later. Yeah.
He walked up and looked in the coffin or whatever it was, and it was him. That was that was a really amazing thing. He was walking in the White House and came across his own funeral.
So dying usually represents transformation of some kind.
Right.
So
sometimes represents dying.
Right. So so for example, if
that
you
was
have
a prophetic dream.
Right. If you have a dream of like of your boyfriend dying, it might, but it's extremely unlikely to mean that he's going to die in real life. It might mean, but it's less likely to mean that you need to learn how to live without the person. What it probably does mean is that your notion of what he is, your own idea of what your boyfriend is going to have to undergo some transformation.
Right.
He's going to surprise you, you know. So, yeah, death is a profound thing in dreams. It could be literal, usually not.
So you do dream work with clients that they write their dreams down and send them in to you. Is that right?
That is what ideally happens when I work with individuals at a distance. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if they want to call, they could, but I'm going to insist on some time by myself and then calling the person back later. I do need some time to look at it and have things sort of pop out at me. There are many possible meanings of a dream. And ideally, you don't want the person to understand anything more than he or she's ready to, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in this particular way of working with dreams, a little bit of that is inevitable, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the dream means. The person is going to know ultimately better than I do what it means. I'm just good at helping the person understand really what he or she already knows. And
so
that
did you get the one that I sent to you?
Yeah, I did. I didn't have much, but I had a few minutes chance to look at it. Four or five things popped out right away. So we can go into this if you want. It wouldn't take long. It's not a big deal.
It's a short dream. Very short.
Yeah, it's a short dream.
Took about 2 minutes.
Right.
But it woke
right.
me up, which is unusual.
Yeah.
I think
what it's saying is that you are ready to take over some capacity or function or ability or understanding or role which you haven't quite been ready for yet, but you are now. And that's why the guy was surprised when you turned the gun down toward the seat. You're in a car, you're driving in a car with the guy from a TV show. He's driving, you're in the passenger seat. And he stops in order to answer a question from someone outside. He rolls down the window. The guy points a gun into him, about to shoot him in the head. You reach over and then turn the gun down. So he can't do that. You are some sort of parallel track. You're learning something. You're doing something in some parallel track with stuff. And that person could be an idea or a principle. It could be a spiritual principle. It could be indeed someone in real life that you admire or someone that you're sort of on a parallel track with, learning from, inspired by, perhaps. But you no longer need that crutch to keep going in that regard. You can do it yourself. That's what I would think of it offhand. Not having
it was so weird because I spent so much time after waking up trying to figure out who the guy was next to me that was driving.
Because he's
so familiar. I mean, I couldn't remember if he was somebody I knew and from the past or somebody. And I muscle tested and got that he was a TV character, you know, in some series I was watching. But he's like so familiar to me. And
yeah, it's interesting.
It was weird.
It could be an idea or a principle. The fact that it's a TV person, or if it's associated with the TV, if you have an intuitive association that it's a television involvement, it could be that suggests something that you want to display about yourself, maybe something about renown, being well-known, which
well,
is not necessarily
in my
bad.
Life right now, I'm transitioning out of surgery. Yeah, I'm transitioning out of surgery more into medicine, so. And I think that it's going to be on a more of an educational thing, you know. So maybe the TV is education.
Right. It could be something because it's transmitted over the airwaves. It could be a spiritual thing, you know. But it's something which I'm almost certain it's something which you no longer need any help or understanding or guidance in doing or becoming or understanding or accomplishing. That's my sense of it. Yeah, cool dream.
Well, thank you.
Cool dream. Yeah.
So how do people get in touch with you? Do you have contact information?
Yeah, sure. David Lowe, David at worldspirituality.com. That's my easy email to remember. I have a website, David Lowe, MS as in Masters of Science, PhD as in PhD. No E on the name, David Lowe, LOW, MS, PhD.com. Yeah, and they can contact me, sure.
So what sort of advantages are there with dream work? What can people get out of it?
People can understand a message, which is the common traditional thing that you do when you engage in dream work. But you can do a lot more than that with dreams. They always invariably offer some kind of deeper emotional opening into some personal issue which needs to be resolved at some level. And there are these deep, dark fears which most human beings have, even if they have no traumatic experiences. And, of course, most of us have some of the latter. So there's always an emotional feeling component to all the events in a dream which you can explore therapeutically, which goes beyond the message aspect of it. And more so than that, there are these emerging therapy techniques which involve understanding the dream as a process between you and the dream world. You and the dream world co-create the dream. And dreams often rehearse things in a parallel fashion, which are going on in your life. And by understanding how you can do things differently in a dream than you could have done, or understanding how you managed to do this sort of thing in the dream, so why can't you do it in real life? So you can point out those kinds of parallels between dreaming and real life and get the person to understand that the way he or she interacts with things in the dream is a lesson in terms of how to do things in real life. So it's more a process, not so much the meaning, but a process of co-creating and being more successful at the things that you're doing in life. And the dream points that out to you by creating a parallel between things in the dream and things that are actually happening in your life. So there's like the message, there's the emotional feeling component that you can work out, and there's the understanding of how to be more effective in real life. So there's a lot of dimensions to dream work. Yeah.
So there are some common dreams, like being undressed in public, taking a test.
Right.
Flying, all those different things, losing teeth. Can you talk about some of the meanings of those common things?
Yeah, I call them common psychology dreams. They're pretty much no-brainers. I think most people, you think they sit down and give them some thought, you can pretty much agree. So being chased, maybe almost the most common one. It's always about some responsibility that you're avoiding, that you need to do, something you need to do for yourself or someone else. It could be a health issue. It could be a job issue. It could be a spiritual growth issue. It could be a family workout personality issue. It could be a zillion things, but you're being chased by something that you need to turn around and face and take care of. Duh. You know? Losing your teeth. We bare our teeth when we get angry, like other animals bare their teeth. We show our aggression. We show our power. Losing teeth is usually about anger and frustration very often over losing capacities. Right? So as we get older, we can't do a bunch of things as well as we used to do them. Okay, so losing teeth often happens around that. Undress in public, if you're real defensive about, insecure and paranoid about what other people are thinking of you. Or if you're one of those people who, you sometimes hear people share negative things about themselves. They're kind of cutting themselves down without realizing it. If you do that, you might get a dream of being undressed in public because you're exposing more about yourself than you really should. You know, defensiveness over who you are, talking about yourself in the wrong way, or just being insecure about what others are thinking of you in a way that you don't have to be. So, the message behind that could be either get help or, don't worry about it. You're worrying about all sort of thing too much. Or, get help. Get some kind of therapeutic help with whatever the issue is, which is bothering you. Yeah, there's
what
all
about
these,
taking a test?
Taking a test, I mean, you're usually around some issue around competence, not being mm-hmm. ready to do something. If you're doing a project at work and your boss is counting on you to do it well, and you don't know what you're doing, you know. Mm-hmm. No, you may have a dream of taking a test because you really don't know what you're doing. You know, am I really competent mm-hmm. to do this presentation or not? That could also cause a dream of falling, being out of control, mm-hmm. you know.
Right.
Being completely at sea with what you're trying to do. Or driving out of control in the car. You know, being out of control. Those things, they all indicate, all those three dreams, being undressed in public, falling, driving a car out of control, can all mean slightly the same or slightly different things depending upon the person's situation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, common psychology dreams are mm-hmm. pretty much no-brainers, but they have important messages. You know, we don't have to be as unhappy or as discontent as we often are in life. And that's what they're for.
I remember having this dream of being on a pogo stick, and it was like a super pogo stick. So it was like jumping and jumping and jumping and, you know, flying like, you know, 20, 50 feet
right.
and then another 20, 50 feet. It was really a lot of fun. And when I had it analyzed, it was just that I was bored. So I was bored with my life, so I was doing something fun in my dreams.
That's very plausible.
Because it really was true. It was the only reason. But it's like flying, but on a pogo stick, you know.
Right,
it would
right,
be fun to be able to do that, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, really. Sure. Yeah.
So are there some general guidelines for interpretation that most dream specialists agree on?
I wouldn't say for interpretation. There are definite guidelines for, like, approaching interpretation.
Okay.
Which are important. One is the notion that all dreams come for basically to help us, for our health and wholeness, as Jeremy Taylor said. He was a guy who really has influenced the more humanistic spiritual end of the field more so than anybody else. And that struck home with a lot of us when we first read and heard dreams. They all come from a dream source which wants us to be happier and which is trying to help us out. Only the dreamer can really know what it means in the end, something often overlooked by very aggressive therapists. Only the dreamer has the particular memories and associations with the things in the dream that he has.
Mm-hmm.
The person may be totally wrong in basic dimensions of what the dream is. They may tend to interpret it literally, but once they're on the right track with the symbols and a more plausible meaning, then only they can really know what it means, you know. A dream has more than one meaning and many possible meanings to a dream, mostly because, depending primarily on how much effort the person wants to put into understanding it. You know, like a very complex dream about something at work, some guy, he might just say, it's about something at work, and that's the whole interpretation, right? If he sits down with a therapist about it, he may get a great deal more information about than that, and that's another interpretation. So it depends on how much effort you want to put into understanding it. You know, another notion is the idea that no dream comes to tell you what you already know. There's mm-hmm. always something a dream has to offer you. Okay, but the main thing is that only a dreamer can really understand the dream, and the dreamer needs to be respected for that. And also, the only way you can really know that you're focusing on a good, plausible meaning is when you begin to feel it in your body. You feel it mm-hmm. on a feeling level. There's a personal impact to it. It's not just head stuff anymore. That's when you really know that you're onto something. Those would be the main guidelines to approach interpretation with. Otherwise, there's a whole thing we could go into here about associations with symbols and your background and so forth. So those would be the main important things to talk about briefly in understanding how you should approach interpreting dreams. Respect for the dreamer, with the idea that they all come to help us, that there is a universal language involved, that you can understand it if you work at it hard enough. It takes time. You really need to sit down and with other people, primarily with a group of people, to help you fathom what it's saying. There's nothing more valuable than a dream circle to help you understand stuff, and because they will invariably see things which you don't. No matter how good a therapist or analyzer you are, the best psychiatrist in the world cannot match 10 people who are totally ignorant of dream work. But with them, a good be gotten out of those 10 folks for insight into somebody's dream. Yeah.
I think that some dreams or some classes of dreams occur as part of spiritual development. And I say that because I've had certain dreams, and other people in my meditation group have similar dreams.
Right.
I'll give you an example. I had a dream one time where I was battling a warlock, and it was like an amazing fight. We were hurling balls of, light that were weapons at each other, and we were jumping around and doing all this stuff and flying through the air, and he was almost killing me, and then I was almost killing him, and then we were in this, just this life and death battle that was so exciting. And
uh-huh.
I stepped back and I said, this is a test, and this test is to understand that this isn't real, okay? That
right.
This is just a test. And then I looked around, and there was a master behind me, and he nodded that I got it. And then I looked in the Rudolf Steiner book, and Rudolf Steiner said there comes a time in the life of an initiate where they have a dream, and the point of the dream is just to understand that it is a test.
Yeah.
That you back into, you back out of the dream and into the, where you just go off the court and understand that this is just a test.
Sure, sure. And I think that one general rule when it comes to lucid dreaming and to, well, not only lucid dreaming, but if you're working with somebody and like you're having nightmares or difficult dreams involving conflict with something or someone,
mm-hmm.
the idea is to learn to embrace and love that entity because it is in the end just another aspect of yourself. And that's
yeah.
very difficult.
Yeah.
That's very difficult, especially when if it's a
I was just having a lot of fun fighting. Yeah, this was like a video game. I was
oh,
just
right.
having a lot of fun doing it, so it wasn't scary or anything. But
right.
it something hit me all at once, going, you can do this all day long, but that wasn't the point of what I was supposed to realize. I was supposed to realize that this was an artificial test, and I had to realize that it was just an exercise.
Yeah. Wow, that's cool.
Stepping
out
of the dream world. Yeah.
Yeah. More typically, somebody who was, say, abused sexually or something, had like lots
mm-hmm.
of early trauma or whatever, that manifests in real life as maybe a mild depression, resentment all the time. In the dream,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be a woolly mammoth charging you. Okay,
mm-hmm.
it's a totally different thing. But that's the way dreams can help us resolve issues. We can turn around
mm-hmm.
and face these things slowly but surely. And embrace them in your dreams. If you're not lucid, you can do it anyway through enough work and affirmations and prayer and intentions and so forth.
Right.
So there's all kinds of great things which dreams can help us do. Wow.
Well, that's a good introduction to lucid dreaming, because lucid dreaming is that realization that you're in a dream. I mean, that's what lucid
right.
dreaming is, right?
Yeah.
So. People who are doing dream work then eventually get to lucid dreaming. And I guess the one example is to look at your hand in a dream and realize that you're looking at your hand. That's a classic lucid dreaming.
That's a classic from Castaneda, sure.
Right,
sure, yeah,
right. Absolutely. So how did that come about? I mean, what's that all about?
Well, lucid dreaming most often happens spontaneously. The person just wakes up in the dream, usually as a result of some difficult part of the dream, something scary or
mm-hmm.
difficult in the dream itself, causes them to wake up and say, wow, I'm dreaming. Okay.
Right.
And, I mean, there are, I think it's just a matter of slowly increasing awareness on the part of the seeker. I mean,
mm-hmm.
the further you go along in life and your spirituality, at some point you will become more aware in other realities, aside from greater awareness in this reality. So it's inevitable that you will have lucid dreams. Now, some people, whether because of internal spiritual profile or whatever, are cut out to have them more often than others, as
mm-hmm.
you know. But, yeah, it just happens. And there are these, induction techniques you can do and so forth, but the main thing to realize about there's an interesting difference between lucid dreaming and out-of-body experiences. The thing about lucid dreaming is that you have to go to sleep first, right? You can do all these induction techniques involving affirmations or auto-suggestions or there's one called mnemonic-induced. There's one, you know, there's all these different, they're all ways of getting yourself to remember in the dream that you're dreaming. But you have to go to sleep first, so there's no guarantee that
it will ever happen. Yeah, really.
Right. Exactly.
Lucid dreaming is a lot more difficult than people know. It really is. It's like,
What's interesting about, you know, people go through phases. So you go through different stages. The lucid dreaming I did happened primarily. It was guru powered, as it were. After my major initiation, I went through about a 3-month phase of extraordinarily powerful, spectacular lucid dreaming, and then it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, it happens only very occasionally.
Right.
So, but the stages people go through are pretty predictable. First, there's this inevitable preoccupation with pleasures and all these amazing, wonderful things you can do, sex with anyone you want, all that sort of thing. So you have to get your fill with this new, beautiful, gorgeous, extraordinary world to do all kinds of things with, right?
Mm-hmm.
After that, there's the basic physics. How do I move around? How do I change an object with my mind? How do I fly? Mm-hmm. How do I do a backflip if I want to?
Right.
And what's interesting is I can remember, you might too for all I know, trying to move in a dream and having my limbs be very sluggish, almost like I was moving through water. You know, that is thought by some lucid dreaming experts to be a matter of belief. If you really don't fathom or completely buy into the notion that there are higher realities, then you might think all this is just a delusion, and therefore you might actually have trouble moving about in a dream world because you don't believe, because you only half believe in it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to get good at the basic physics of like kind of how it all works. Then you move on to more advanced, as it were, physics of understanding of how to control or half control the entire dreamscape. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot completely control the dreamscape. It's always going to come up with things which are going to be challenging you in one way or another. That's inevitable.
Right.
But you can, in a sense, direct it in one way or another. So how to do that overall, how to control, if something comes at you, it's very aggressive, you can't stop it. How do we handle that kind of situation, you know? So you learn all that stuff. You might start dealing with teachers at that point, because everybody, inevitably, if they get into lucid dreaming, if you are one of those folks whose destiny it is to you know, lucid dream a lot and to go to higher and higher levels of it, there are people at the International Association for the Study of Dreams. They're not religious. They don't practice a mystical tradition or anything, but they're having these extraordinary lucid dreams of visiting other star systems and so on, with unbelievable levels of lucidity. I myself was never more than, I will say, 95% lucid. Enough to do some important things, but never more than 95%. These guys are 100% for hours on end going to who knows what realms of reality.
So, and they dream together, too, don't they? They dream together?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Don't they dream together as a group sometimes?
Yeah, that's a whole other area. There's something called mutual dreaming, and where people are doing experiments about, you know, you set up ahead of time, okay, we're going to be in such and such a place. We are going to say this to each other and that to each other. We will then perform these movements and so forth, and then you all get together the next day or the next week and discuss whether or not you actually did that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And experiments with that have been fairly positive. There have been more or less evidence in terms of evidentiary witness data. It seems to really happen that two people can share the same dream reality.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the whole area of mutual dreaming. There are people who all get together and who try to dream for peace, you know, which is great.
Right.
You know, people all get together in a
higher
reality.
Probably a good service.
Yeah, right. I mean, even if it's probably maybe 4 out of 5 people who are doing that, don't have any great experience of dreaming with other people, literally, but they do have a sense of faith in what they're doing, and mm-hmm. they may have had one or two dreams. So yeah, there are these experiments ongoing to establish in the literature whether or not there is such a thing as mutual dreaming, or whether or not, and if so, how much can you have in common, and mm-hmm. whether or not, you know, it is a useful spiritual mechanism to get together and dream for world peace and that sort of thing. Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, I think there is a theory, too, like you mentioned at the beginning of the interview, that if we've got, as a consciousness, if we've got several pathways that we can take,
right.
we
right.
may, at some level, do kind of a lucid dreaming, a mutual lucid dreaming, to determine which way the timeline's going to go.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I pretty much everybody, no matter what your path is going to be acquainted with higher reality. And that will, you know, one way or another, we need to be exposed to these things to really believe in them. And so pretty much everybody will, at least in the course of their growth, be exposed to these to higher reality in that deeper mm-hmm. sense. Yeah. So, can you give me an example of what you were saying? Being could go in one way or the other.
Well, let me give you an example of something that we could do. We've got probably a couple of thousand people listening to us, and this is pre-recorded, so this is actually going to air 5/5. But I'm very disturbed, and you probably are too, that Russia and the U.S. are kicking each other's embassies out. You know,
right.
that's
right.
not a good path. Okay. So we could say to everybody out there, you know, depending on if this is still continuing, that we should get together for a lucid dreaming thing where we come up with a solution so that we don't go down the path of, you know, not getting along, but instead turn it toward getting back in each other's good graces. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
That would be something that, I mean, probably still in May, we're still not in each other's embassies, you know, things
right,
being
right.
the way.
Well, of course, being kicked out of each other's embassies is just a cover.
But
for
that
us
bothers
getting,
me. I mean, that whole thing bothers me that we're going down that path. That's not a good path.
No,
that doesn't lead to good things. Okay. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think it's just, you know, a spat. I think that it's a lot more than that, and I think that it's a lot more dangerous than.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think it's also a cover for what, I mean, it's almost like Trump and Putin want that to happen, so that it can seem more than ever like we're actually, like they aren't getting along. Anyway, yeah, you're right.
It's not good, no matter, I mean, I don't know what I guess the whole thing is from the poisoning, you know, we're lining up to support our allies, which are the British, but, you know, the idea here is that it's a more dangerous path than if it hadn't happened. So
in the dream world,
if we could probably dream a solution that would get us back on a good path, you see?
So ideally, with these 2,000 people, we want to do something which is a teeny bit ritualistic. We can't just say, everybody, please try to dream like such and such and so on a particular mm-hmm. night at a particular time. There needs to be some physical thing we're all doing which is the same, even if it's just folding our hands when we sit down in bed at night, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The same night we all fold our hands together in that universal prayer position and just imagine being with all each other. And then we all go to sleep in all of our separate locations with the same mm-hmm. pre-written intention of how to dream. That'd be great.
Well, we could ask people to do that on 5/5, because that's when it's going to air.
Oh, okay. Know? Yeah, sure. Yeah, exactly. So everyone writes out the same thing, same question, mm-hmm. the same thing.
Come up with a solution so we don't. So, you know, it's not, we don't know the solution, but the idea is that if we dream as a group, we might be able to come up with a solution that takes us out of that dangerous pathway.
Exactly. And what we would want to do is just like have the same verbal question that everybody thinks about, have the same brief ritual thing that everybody does at the same time. And then we all dream. We just go to sleep and hope for the best. Yeah, that sounds cool.
It does.
That sounds cool.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if people,
I'll email you on that, actually.
Yeah, yeah. We can have people email. Why don't we have people email you if they have anything to say about that, and then we can talk about it next time we get on.
That'd be great. So, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be good. So the idea here is that this show's going to air on 5/5, and I'm assuming that, you know, in a month we'll still not have the embassy situation solved. I mean, it may be solved, it may not. But if it isn't, just you want to take him through what to do in terms of the prayer and everything?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't do it right off the bat, but I will do it. Okay. Well, basically, we want to come up. Do you want to do this now? Because I could take a stab at it now.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Just kind of do a thing, take notes, you know.
Yeah, so first, we want to come up with the same intention, thinking intention, which is, ponder the idea of the Russia and the United States re-engaging their embassies, right? That's the visual intention we want, okay? And then think about that for a minute. That's step one.
Mm-hmm. And then the common ground that we have to have in order to get along. Because we do have common ground.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So right. So that sentence, we want the Russian and American embassies to reengage. Then that's number one, just have that sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is to think about how it would come about. Kind of mechanically, visualize it happening. Number two, visualize it happening.
Mm-hmm.
Number three is meditate on it for a second. So three steps: one, get your sense, get your idea; two, visualize it; and three, meditate and pray on it. And that's where the common ground implicit notion comes into play. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then number four, do your ritual motion, bring your hands together for a few seconds. And number five, you release it.
Mm-hmm.
You release it out into the universe. You release it into your into the deepest recesses of your heart, which of course is the same thing.
Right.
So one, get your sentence. Mm-hmm. Get your affirmation. Think of it as an affirmation. Russian and American embassies reengage. Everybody write that down. Russian and American embassies reengage. To visualize it actually happening. That's important. You want to actually put a template out there in higher reality that it can manifest in real life. Number three, meditate and pray on it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you give it up to the ultimate mystery and think about that ideal, common, profound ethic that we all want to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And then four, bring your hands together physically in front of you. And number five, surrender.
Mm-hmm.
That is, release it to the universe and get what we need, as they say. We can hope, what we need, what we want, and what we need are two different things. But we'll surrender to whatever result comes along.
Right. And then, what email address can they email you at if they've got something to say about this exercise?
David@worldspirituality.com.
Okay. So you want to talk a little bit about the dream work that you do and how you help people with their dreams?
Yeah, basically, I like to work with folks face-to-face, ideally, or by Skype. Less ideally, send me the dream. Send me the dream in writing.
Mm-hmm.
I will want to look at it in writing no matter what format we use for our session. So ideally send it in writing, then we get together physically on Skype or in person, and we go over stuff, and I will person realizes that this is his business, his understanding, and not my understanding. It has to ring true for him, you know.
Right.
And I will also have gotten personal information about the individual, what the person's mind is dwelling on, internal and external issues. That's the single most important thing for good dream work. But also, you know, relevant personal demographic information, family configuration, rifts between people, who's alive, who's dead, occupation, health issues, all that sort of thing very often works into it. But what is the person's mind dwelling on? What practical issues and what internal issues are there? So all that information I get, they give me the dream, we get together and we go over it in some detail. And I will, you know, get the person to really understand that it's his dream, and he or she, if they don't agree with me, that's great. They can have their own. Then I will help them perhaps look at a secondary or tertiary interpretation of it. But usually, there's a very definite feeling, a very definite kind of feeling in your body, a kind of confluence of emotional power, if you will, which you do feel when you're on the right track. Yeah,
right.
So that's pretty much what I do. Dream groups are the best thing. I have I have a couple of them going. I want to start doing dream groups online, which is possible with Zoom or Skype. A little bit inconvenient, but people can do it, so I do want to start doing that as well. If anybody interested in that, give me a call. I'm in the process of arranging that, or starting to arrange it through Skype or Zoom or some video conferencing service.
So some people do have recurrent dreams, and that would be probably an idea where, if you're having a recurrent dream, getting a dream interpretation would be more important.
Yeah, that's interesting. Recurring, a lot of people do have lifelong issues which they never get over and which they never will get over, just because it's part of their situation. So recurring dreams, in one sense, can be okay in that they can remind you that this issue is out there. You should keep your eye on it. But very often, it's like, you know, wake up, stupid. We've been trying to tell you this for years and years and years and years. One of these days, we hope you're going to think it's important enough to try to understand. So repetitive dreams, especially if they're unpleasant or testy, are very important to finally start paying attention to, because it's about something which the person is doing his best to ignore. They're important to really, really important to look at and to understand, just like nightmares. The more unpleasant the dream is, the only reason that a dream is unpleasant, and not everybody agrees with me on this, there are people who interpret dreams, as it were, less spiritually. There are other major schools of psychology, dream work, who only understand dreams within a cultural context instead of something universal, to say nothing of the folks who don't believe they have anything to offer at all. It's just interesting neurochemistry. So there are these different levels. But so, sorry, what was your question? I got lost talking about that.
Well, you were saying that there's like a common interpretation that doesn't have the spirituality component, but you're doing more the spirituality, I think.
Right. Okay. Again, this notion that there needs to be faith in the idea that the dream comes for a reason. Okay.
Right. From a higher level of
A higher level of reality, offering you a greater something to accomplish for the sake of a greater sense of happiness and fulfillment. So it's there. And understanding it, of course, is, you know, you can, again, the most important thing is to get a dialogue going with your dream. It takes time, it takes work, but writing them down when you have them, even if it's just four or five bullet points of major things that you saw, which will bring the rest of it back later in memory. You're thinking about what it might mean and writing questions back to God, you know, or whoever, about give me another shot. Give me another try. I have no idea what you're talking about. What's going on with this?
Right.
Please. There needs to be that dialogue. You pray and meditate on it and so forth. And that dream faculty will start to help you. It will shift and begin to do its work. But you need to be interested in it. There needs to be
I want to tell a story about using dream symbology for my higher self getting an important message to me. I told this before, but it really shows how dream symbolism can be very helpful. When I first started the practice, I made the mistake of trying to do a budget and figured out that, you know, the budget wasn't looking good. You know, there was going to be money problems, and there really wasn't going to be money problems, but I was worried about it. So I went home, and in the middle of the night, I opened the front door, and there was a giant spider web with a big spider in the front door, which is very weird. You know, I mean, first of all, to see a real big spider, and then right in, there was never a spider web across my front door before.
Oh, my God. Yeah, right.
And so it got my attention. Okay, well, I closed the door very quickly before the spider could come in the house. And Spirit said, go look in your Zoller's dream book. So there's a Zoller's dream book of dream symbolism. So I went and got it, and it was seeing a spider at night means prosperity. So I was told not to worry about money because I was going to do fine.
Right.
So that's dream symbolism without dreaming.
Yeah, I can tell. I'm offhand. I can say that night is the great mystery, the great darkness, that unfathomable mystery, and the spider is the master of it.
You right.
Know, okay. I can see that vaguely.
I didn't have a dream, but I got the dream symbolism in real life, which is even more in your face, so to speak.
Right.
And so that I always thought that that was a great way to communicate to me that I didn't need to worry about the money. So.
Right. That's cool.
I didn't.
That's cool.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Yeah, sure. David Lowe, L-O-W, no E on the end of the name. David Lowe, M-S, Ph-D is the website. And the email, david@worldspirituality.com. Cell phone, if you want, 215-206-4091. We'd love to talk to you. Be cool.
Great. And for those out there that want to participate, if on 5/5/2018, we still have this Russian-U.S. split with our embassies not populated, let's try this lucid dreaming, group dreaming thing to come up with a solution. And then if you have an experience with that, then email David, and we can share it the next time he comes on.
So on 5/5, we're all going to do that, right?
Yeah, on 5/5.
Okay.
Well, I don't think this is playing right now. I think this is a true pre-record, but it will play on 5/5.
So,
right?
On what date should everybody do this? This is my question.
It's Saturday. That's Saturday. 5/5 is Saturday. So
okay.
It would be
okay. Good.
Because they'll hear it at noon. They might as well do it that night. Because if you have them do it later, they may forget to do it, as you know.
Okay. So, great. Excellent.
Just 5/5. Now you and I have to remember to do it on 5/5. So there you go.
Right. Very good.
We'll write it down. Well, thanks so much for joining me, David. It's been a great conversation.
All right. Thank you, Susan. It's always a pleasure. Better luck, Nate. We'll do it again soon.
We will. This is Dr. Susan Kolb interviewing Dr. David Lowe. Please join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.
Bye-bye.